But I think the more recent data, which has been quite interesting, that was published by Joe Sperano in the New England Journal of Medicine and recently presented at ASCO, looked at this issue of clinical risk. And I think this is, of course, something that we've been waiting for some time, because when we see a recurrent score on a given patient and we think about the benefit or lack of benefit, we sort of see data without information about the clinical characteristics. And as we think about these genomic assays, it's been pretty clear that the clinical characteristics still matter. So as we look at something, for example, like the EP assay or EndoPredict assay, one of the things that has been shown is that you get a much more robust sense of the value of that assay when you bring in the clinical factors. And indeed, this is really the analysis from the TAILOR-RX study, is that, first of all, that clinical risk does matter. And so, for example, if you have a small tumor, let's say less than 1 centimeter, low grade, that the implications in terms of the risk for a late disease event, that clinical risk still matters despite your genomic data. What was important to note, however, was despite looking at these varying different clinical risks, that in postmenopausal women, that there was still no value of giving chemotherapy whether you had sort of high clinical risk or low clinical risk. And that is, so if you had a 65-year-old woman that had more high clinical risk features, larger tumor, we could still say with confidence that chemotherapy was not having value. What was interesting, however, was looking at the premenopausal women, Neil, and that is that there appears to be something different about premenopausal women. And I think one of the caveats about interpreting the TAILOR-RX data in the premenopausal setting is that these patients were enrolling at a time when most of them were getting tamoxifen monotherapy. In fact, about 85% or so received tamoxifen monotherapy. So we know that today that just giving proper endocrine therapy, that would be adding ovarian function suppression, and in some patients even adding in an AI, that actually gives you a large delta, a large benefit. And so knowing the history of the fact that chemotherapy-induced amenorrhea is an important prognostic factor, what we don't know in this situation is how much did chemotherapy-associated amenorrhea impact the outcomes of these patients. That being said, it's pretty clear that there is a subgroup of patients within the intermediate group, perhaps in that 16 to 20 and 20 to 25 range, that appear with high clinical risk to be benefiting from chemotherapy. We can only surmise at this point, is it because of the chemotherapy effects on the ovaries, or is it something unrelated? And one of the things that I'm kind of interested about, Neil, is the fact that we have patients who are premenopausal who are more likely to have pathogenic mutations in something like a BRCA1 or a BRCA2 gene. And we know already that deficiencies in DNA repair confer chemotherapy benefit in some of these patients. So I think a question is, are they benefiting because we're ablating their ovaries, or is it just that chemotherapy works better in these younger patients? And I think that's an unanswered question, but certainly these are provocative data.
That's interesting. I hadn't really thought it. When I think about DNA repair, I think about platinums, but do you think that applies to chemotherapy in general?
I think it does. And, you know, I think the idea here is to say that, you know, for example, when one utilizes a regimen such as docetaxel and cyclophosphamide, when you're using a drug that targets DNA like cyclophosphamide, or obviously the classic one are the anthracyclines, we know that these drugs do benefit patients with DNA repair deficiencies. We think, obviously, that platinums might be the optimal way to go, but we actually don't have, if you will, level one data that we should choose a platinum over our standard therapies. And so I think a question moving forward in the TAILOR-RX study, especially in these young premenopausal women, is the benefit that we're seeing perhaps restricted to certain types of patients? I don't think we know the answer to that, but I think there's an interest in looking at that moving forward.
So getting back to these recent data, looking at clinical factors, the one that seemed to strike me as being very common, as you mentioned, was size. And I think it was 3 centimeters that sort of was the breaking point. But does that mean for you it's biology, not anatomy? I mean, 4 and 5 centimeters, are you still in a postmenopausal woman comfortable not using chemotherapy in an intermediate score?
I think I'm quite confident about not using chemotherapy in that postmenopausal woman. I think what we can say is that risk does not always confer benefit from our therapies. What's pretty clear is that, and as we look at TAILOR-RX, but not only that, but the recent Oxford overview with regard to the late recurrence outcomes that were published a few years ago, that these clinical characteristics have implications with regard to risk for recurrence. So I like to think of it this way, is that you know, higher disease burden, a larger tumor nodal status certainly imparts a higher risk for distant metastases, but does not necessarily give me input necessarily that those patients, at least based on TAILORx, I can confidently say that our best approach right now needs to be to deliver better targeted therapies focused on the estrogen receptor for those patients as opposed to chemotherapy. And the nice thing about this, and when I speak to patients in the clinic, I like to think of it this way, very simplistically. We have types of breast cancers where targeting the estrogen receptor leads to excellent long-term outcomes, and we're very confident, for example, based on TAILORx, that we can focus on estrogen targeting therapies. And then we have these patients with the higher recurrence score patient I just mentioned, where we're actually quite concerned that endocrine therapy alone is really not going to have substantial effects on inhibiting the growth of presumed micrometastatic disease.